You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. The sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's the Sunday edition. Thanks for joining us here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's myself, Mike Blewett, and my trusted cohort, George Kurtz, will be here for the next 2 hours. We actually have a lot of guests today, so I'm excited about that. Three guests in total. Tried to get somebody in yesterday, but it ended up rolling up all into today. So at 8:40, we're going to have Joe Bond of Fantasy Six Pack. He's a fantasy sports writer for so-called Fantasy Experts. And then at 9:09, we'll have Wallace Matthews, a longtime baseball beat writer. And then at 9:40, we're going to have Teron Davenport. He's an Eagles beat writer, so looking forward to talking to him. So we'll get in a little baseball, a whole lot of football today, George. And obviously a lot of action on the diamond yesterday. The Yankees and the Sox basically played two games. We had Cody Bellinger just continuing to write his kind of own Roy Hobbsian type of story. We have Aaron Judge in the American League and Cody Bellinger in the National League. He hits for the cycle yesterday, which, as you've said in the past, is just sort of a happenstance thing, but at least it means he got four more hits.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it means. And he had been slumping a little bit of late, so it's good to see that as well. Yeah, the cycle to me is just a luck. I mean, I don't know why he makes such a big deal. It's a big deal. You got this single, double, triple, home run. If it was important, we've seen plenty of times where guys who, you know, had a single, triple, home run, their last at bat, they hit another home run. They don't stop at second. They don't stop at third to get the cycle. The game didn't mean anything. It's really kind of a silly little stat there. It's more of a fun thing more than anything else. But hey, like I said, fantasy wise, Bellinger had been slumping before the break, so it's good to see him maybe get back on track for another hot streak here.
Yeah. Do you think John Farrell had a right to throw out that protest yesterday? Not that it ever amounts to anything, but throw out the protest for interference on the holiday ground ball?
I have no doubt that it was interference.
Yeah.
I mean, I also have no doubt that Holiday wasn't doing it on purpose. I think Holiday was just all screwed up.
He thought that the
play was still in motion, that the guy stepped on first base. You know, that he wasn't forced, that he was in a rundown now. So he screwed up. But by rule, once you're out, you need to get off the base paths. And he did not. Whether you know it or not, you're supposed to get off. It's sort of like running into a field on accident. You're still out. Doesn't matter if you did it on purpose or not. But that being said, what's the point of the protest? They didn't score that inning.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
So what are you protesting?
Yeah.
The fact that the umpire screwed up?
I mean, at the time, you know, you have Ellsbury on first, and it's a tie game in the 11th inning. So to those that didn't see it, it was a hard shot. Matt Holliday's on first. Ellsbury is up. Hard shot, like a one-hopper to the first baseman. He turns, pivots towards second to try to complete the 3-6-3 double play. Matt Holliday's confused. He slides back into first, and as it goes from 3-6 and back to first base, everybody's standing on first base at the same time. Ellsbury gets hit with the ball. Holliday's in the first baseman's way. It was a disaster. We'll talk about more fantasy relevant things after the break. It's Mike and George, guest galore today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Excited to have you listen. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike Blewett, George Kurtz. Be here for the next 2 hours. Like I said, guests are going to be with us today. We're going to get some really good perspectives. George, Wally Matthews is a guy that, as you and I, as Yankees fans, he's really been dialed into the Yankees for a very long time, a very well-respected baseball writer.
If you follow Wallace Matthews on Twitter, I mean, listen, he's a great follow. He's a lot of fun. He has a very good sense of humor.
Absolutely.
He's certainly not afraid to fire back at anybody. I think he's at Oyster Bay Bomber.
Oyster Bay Bomber, yes.
Yeah, so it's a fantastic follow for Wally. He covers the Yankees and the Mets. I think he's in the Mets this weekend. He's been in the Mets clubhouse all weekend, covering them against the Rockies. But he knows his Yankee stuff as well.
Yeah. Speaking of the Mets, Cespedes looks like he left the game yesterday. Is that right?
Yeah, calling it a hip injury. Not serious, what we heard last night, but he probably will not play today. Cespedes looks to me, I remember back in February, March, ESPN did a little thing on him about how hard he worked out during the offseason. But if you look at him, Mike, he is really chiseled, and that's generally not good for a baseball player. You need to be more fluid. And it makes you wonder, though, all that muscle is what's really hurting him. Because every time he sees a run, leg out, a double, try to get to a ball in the gap, he's pulling something. And now it's a hip injury. They say right now, not serious, but we know with the Mets, not serious tends to end up putting you on a 72-hour death watch.
Yeah, the last time he got hurt, it wasn't expected to be that serious. And how long did we lose him for? A month?
Yeah, like I said, these injuries can be tricky. At least it's not the hamstring. It's not a groin, something that can be very tricky. Hip, we don't know what that means. And hip is generally something you don't pull. It's more of an injury where it's as long as you didn't tear the cartilage there or tear the labrum there, it's, if you didn't bruise it, how did you hurt the hip? It's a little bit of a strange injury.
Yeah, I agree. So we will see how that works out. For Cespedes, it's just something we're going to have to keep an eye on. He's still very much a fantasy asset. So clearly people do not want to see him hit the DL again. We will keep you posted. But the Mets really teed off yesterday on Tyler Chatwood. They pick up 7 runs in those first 2 innings, and they were off and running. Jay Bruce hits his 24th homer. Seth Lugo, George, he throws a decent outing yesterday. 6 2/3, gives up 3 runs, but he homers in his start yesterday.
It's funny, Mike. I'm out last night with friends. I'm out all day, all night, so I don't know anything about baseball. It's one of those days that I'm not, not until I came home, am I checking up on anything. And my one friend's a Met fan. He's checking the scores, and I see him all upset. And I'm like, what happened? Mets lost? And he's like, no, they won. Now they may not be sellers now. It's funny how this time of year really hurts your fanship. Because he wants them to sell. He thinks they even if they get in, they're not a good team. Doesn't want them. I guess what he doesn't want them to do is buy or not sell by the deadline, and then fall apart in August and September, and you get nothing. You're 0-2 there. You didn't sell and you didn't make the playoffs. And so it's I'm not gonna say top line speculation, but speculation like it's getting bigger and bigger that it's only a matter of time until the Wilpons will force Alderson. Once the Mets are out of it, and once attendance starts to sag a little bit, that the Wilpons will force Alderson to call up Tim Tebow.
I actually heard an interview earlier this week with Mark Teixeira, and he was asked about it, and he said, "What did you think would happen in this instance? What do you think the reaction might be to Tim Tebow being called up, which would obviously be just a publicity stunt? And do you think it would be disrespectful, or what is your standpoint on it?" And he basically said that there's no way that you can bring a guy up of this caliber who's frankly struggling at the A level to bring him up into the majors and take a spot. Imagine if you're one of these 40-man roster guys that's been a fringe 40-man roster and has really worked his tail off to try to get to the majors and maybe having a pretty good season worthy of being called up in September, and then Tim Tebow's there in your place. I mean, Teixeira was pretty strong about it. He was respectful, but pretty strong about it. Saying that Tebow's a great guy, but he hasn't earned his place here. I don't really see how anybody could disagree with that.
No, I'm completely on board with Teixeira. I mean, isn't it already disrespectful? Sure, he's not on the 40, but he's taking a job of somebody who deserves it more. Remember, Tim Tebow doesn't even play on the weekends during college football season because he covers the SEC for the ESPN. I mean, it's a joke, really, what's going on here. I mean, obviously, it doesn't matter. He may not get called up, but actually, they're starting a growing speculation that the Mets fall out of it because the Wilpons, they think mainly by money more than they think baseball, that they could do something like this. And it's something that they've done, not to this degree, but they've done stuff like this in the past. They think about money first, team second.
Yeah, I mean, it may be a dream for Tebow to do that, and I'm sure it would be kind of a cool experience. But I think even for him, on some level, he's a professional athlete. Currently a minor league baseball player, but formerly a quarterback in the NFL. He understands how hard you have to work to get there. I would actually think it would be awkward for him as well.
Yeah, it's you would think. I don't know if it is or it isn't, but you would think it is. I mean, some of these athletes have a high opinion of themselves, think they could do anything. But I would think it would be kind of weird for him, knowing that he doesn't truly deserve to be there. And he's still a professional athlete. He's getting paid down there, so he's professional. Yeah. I guess it's just a... I hope it doesn't happen. It's nothing against Tim Tebow. I just I like to see players deserve it to get called up, not because hey you're trying to get an extra 5,000 fans in the seats.
Yeah.
You know, but it'll be interesting to see if the Mets do fall out of it, what they do.
I think Alderson would just be gone. I mean, he would just not be in it.
I wonder if he would quit.
Look, that could really create, if the Wilpons were very strong about it, that could create some real tension. And I was saying it would be awkward for Tebow because I think the major league players that are on the roster at the time would be upset about it and realize that it's making a mockery of the team. Look, for an organization that gets pounded on, not just by us, George, but by the entire country that follows baseball, pounds on the Mets regularly, and what a joke they are. And now we're talking about, 41, 47. Are they going to buy? Are they going to sell? You know, we've done a lot of beating up on them this year. Frankly, the injuries have really taken them out of it. They're 6 games below 500. If they had been relatively healthy, one would assume they're a 500 team, which would be disappointing for them. But at least they wouldn't be an abject disaster. For most of the season, they've just been kind of a punchline, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at this season, in my mind, the Mets are one of the top five worst run organizations in sports. And that's generally from the Wilpons. I think Aldis is actually a decent GM, but I think any some of his decisions this year have been questionable, especially with the injuries and not putting guys on the DL right away. The Mets haven't massaged the DL like other teams have. And it seems they always come back and bite them. And now we bring up the suspense that you and I have been joking about, but it's the same thing. You know, they say it's not serious, and all of a sudden he'll be out for 2 months. You know, and if he's out 3, 4, 5 days, they won't put him on a DL, which will make no sense because the man's been hurt 2, 3, 4 times already this season. You know, why would you want to take a chance again? They do see the Mets, the Wilpons, think about money more than about winning. We've seen that over and over again. The Mets probably should have dipped stronger at the free agency. You had all the pitching. So I understand they got hurt, but they didn't know that coming in. And you didn't fortify the team to make a run. Your window is now. You know, that window will go away in a bit. So it's you're still not finding a way to get Conforto in your lineup every day. You know, once again, he was supposed to start the season in the minors. But because of injuries, he ended up making the team. You didn't alleviate the outfield logjam over the offseason. It just goes back over and over again about how the Mets are just a strange team. Like I said, for me, you throw them up there, the sports I follow, baseball, football, hockey, Mets, Islanders, the Cleveland Browns, where the 49ers would have been on this list before they gutted and finally put in Shanahan and Lynch. We'll see if that works out there. But the Mets are right at the top of that list, man. Worst run organizations in sports.
Sadly, I'd throw another New York team into that pile. The Knicks may actually be worse than all
basketball.
Of them. But I'll talk about one game real quick before we hit the break, because we're going to transition over to football. George and I are going to talk about the NFC East today. Since we have Teron Davenport, an Eagles writer, we'll focus on the NFC East in general. But Alex Wood, George, he moves to 11-0, 6 innings yesterday, 3 runs, clean with 4 strikeouts.
He's been fantastic. I mean, he's just been fantastic. The man doesn't lose. He's got that funky delivery, Mike, so you're worried about an injury pretty much at any time, but batters can't pick it up right now. He's only, I think, 26 years old, so Atlanta gave up on him quick, probably be thinking, hey, that delivery is going to be a nightmare, and certainly he's going to blow out the shoulder, blow out the elbow, and he has. You know, he has hurt himself. His delivery is even funkier than Chris Sale, which is saying quite a lot.
Yeah, so courtesy of our colleague Matt Modica at CTM Baseball, he's a great follow because he's always putting out stats like this. Alex Wood's last 10 games started, 62 innings pitched, George, 35 hits, 6 earned runs, 1 homer, 14 walks, 74 Ks, a .87 ERA, and a .79 whip. Can't get any more dominant than that.
No, other than he's not going deep in the game, 6 innings an outing here, but we'll take that for fantasy. What are you complaining about here? I mean, really, what are you complaining about? He's giving you everything you want, 7.4 strikeouts in those outings. I mean, he's a must-start. That's really the best thing I can say about it. He's a must-start. You're not worried about him right now. You're always, like I said, I remember Chris Sale 2, 3 years ago, Mike. We were always worried. Will this be the start where his shoulder ends up going up the home plate along with the ball?
Yeah.
You know, and would I think the same thing, but either way, he's in my lineup.
Man, think about that again. 10 games started, 6 earned runs. It's incredible. We're going to talk a little bit of football when we come back after the break. It's Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back on the Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Give you an idea of what's coming up later today. Tony Cincotta and Matt Modica will be joined. We'll be following this show up from 10 to 1. It's Fantasy Football Gold, a new show on the network. Started last week. Matt Modica, formerly with us, he'll be in here. He'll probably join us for the last segment here so we can catch up with Matt about a little bit of football stuff. After that, it's going to be Al Melchior, Fan Rag Fantasy Baseball. That is 1 to 3. And then 3 to 5, we're actually going to rerun yesterday's College Football Today show. That's with Joe Lisi and Rich Giamanello. They had really great guests on there yesterday. So Purdue head coach Jeff Brohm, he's new head coach for them. Then we got Akron head coach Terry Bowden, I'm sure everybody's familiar with. And then former Michigan offensive lineman John Jansen, who played in the NFL for a number of years. So really three good guests to listen to. That's 3 to 5 today with Joe and Rich. So a lot of guests all across the network today and a lot of good shows. So feel free to listen in. Keep it tuned in on your phone, on the app, which I hopefully you've downloaded the app, the FNTSY radio app, as opposed to listening, as Nando DeFino says, like a weirdo through the website. Just download the app. It's free. Free to download, free to listen. You can listen to us all day and all the other content I just mentioned. So please do that. So, George, a little bit about my draft updates. So in our mock draft that we're doing for Roto Experts right now, it's a standard mock draft. I really have tried to take the quarterback thing to an extreme, saying, just wait all day on quarterbacks. And now it's getting to the point where it's ridiculous because I'm in the 10th round. I don't like anybody nearly as much as some of the quarterbacks that are left. And
I don't have to, you know, I mean? A quarterback either, Mike.
Yeah. I tried to do this, but unfortunately, everybody else is doing the same thing, including you and half the draft. But I'm in the 10th round, and Russell Wilson is just kind of staring me in the face.
Matter of fact, I think you go now. I go next, by the way, in that league. You're right. It's and I understand what you're saying. There are no wide receivers and running backs have been picked clean. There really is nobody left there. Quincy Enunwa and Kevin White just went off the board at wide receiver to give you an idea of what's left there at wide receiver. The top running back on my board are guys like Terrence West and Matt Forte, Latavius Johnson, guys like that. This is a standard league, not a PPR league. So I hear you. I feel your pain, Mike. And I've been thinking about two rounds. Even though I want to wait on quarterback, I've been thinking for about two rounds now to take a quarterback. But I also, the quarterbacks who are still available right now, only seven have been taken in this draft. Wilson, Cousins, Newton, Prescott, Taylor, Rivers, Stafford, Carr, Roethlisberger, Eli Manning. These guys are all still available. It's one of the reasons why we're telling you over and over again, you're probably better off waiting. I understand you want a superstar. I get that. And if those guys would have lasted, you know, if Aaron Rodgers, instead of going in the average of round three is where he's normally being drafted, if he would last round five, round six, I'd think differently. But I'm not going to spend a third round pick on a quarterback, not in a deep, deep draft like this. And it's showing again. It's a 12-team league. We're right now at Mike's, like you said, Mike's got the second pick of the 10th round, and those quarterbacks I named are still there, and there's plenty of them. You could probably wait two more rounds to still get one.
Like, I just took Sterling Shepard, and I don't have a quarterback yet. Devontae Parker, I somehow got him. That was an accident, actually, in the way I pre-ranked a bunch of guys. So I'm not super high on Devontae Parker. It's a mock draft, so I wasn't going to freak out that it didn't get rolled back, but that was an accident. But I'll tell you what was an accident of my own doing was I have three rookie running backs, and I absolutely did not plan it out to be this way. I took Fournette first because I needed kind of a bell cow back in this standard draft, and then the next time I took one, it was McCaffrey. It's like the second or third time I've taken him in drafts this season. And then later I got Kareem Hunt, and then I just kind of wanted Tevin Coleman to have a little bit of depth, but I didn't really expect to have three rookie running backs. That would not be my favorite strategy to do in practice.
Yeah, probably a little dangerous there. Although running back is the one place where I don't mind having rookies there, that I wouldn't want all three.
Yeah.
But I don't mind having rookies there because, let's face it, for the most part, as long as they can pick up the blitz, they should do decently. We all know they can hit the hole, so that's my only problem there. My running backs are – I have Devonta Freeman, took him in the first round. After that, I have C.J. Anderson and Blunt, so I have some issues as well, just like most teams. And my next pick, I'm actually probably looking – and another running back to add some depth there, as I have five wide receivers already.
All right, well, I'm going to break the string here. I don't know if I'm going to be looking at him so much this year, but I'm just going to take Russell Wilson here. It's a mock draft, so I just took him. So you're up, and you can pick whoever you like. So I broke the string there. Double-digit rounds. Russell Wilson goes 10th round, second pick, and then George is going to pass on a quarterback again, I assume, because, as we've talked about just now, there are plenty of good guys available still to do that. So, George, we're going to have Joe Bond on here in about 10 minutes. We're going to have Teron Davenport on in an hour. We talked a little bit about new faces, new places yesterday, and I wouldn't want to continue to talk about it again today, but I want to put it in the context of exactly what it is the NFC may look like this year. We talked a bunch about Zeke Elliott yesterday and the potential impact of his suspension. We're going to talk about the Eagles in an hour, so let's just focus on the other two teams for the moment. The Giants had Brandon Marshall. He's a new face, new place kind of guy. Let's start there. How do you see Brandon Marshall really fitting in here? I just took Sterling Shepard in another in the mock draft that I was talking about. So I'm curious what your thoughts are about how this trio of wide receivers with Odell Beckham adding to that, how they shape out, and are there enough balls to go around?
I think there are enough balls to go around because the running game is at best. And I think Paul Perkins is an interesting player to me in a zero running back strategy because he could have a decent season here. But this is going to be a passing offense. The defense is really good, so the offense should have more time with the ball, more possessions there. So, yes, I do like this passing offense. Not worried about Beckham at all. We all know he's Eli's BFF, and he's the guy who's going to get the most targets. Shepard, I think, got hurt the most by signing a Brandon Marshall because I look at it like this with Brandon Marshall. Yes, he had a terrible year last year, but do we remember who the quarterbacks were? I mean, really, it was, Petty. I don't think Hackenberg ever started. Fitzpatrick was terrible. I mean, all the quarterbacks were terrible there. They just could not get the job done, as Tony Sincotta would say. It wasn't working there, and that affected Marshall. Now he's going to a team. He's not the number one here. He's not going to see the number one cornerback. He's not going to see double coverage all that much. That's all going to be on Odell Beckham. I think he's going to have a really solid season. He's a player I'd be targeting. Remember, I think I got him in the Scott Fish Bowl, and I guess I'm wrong. But I got him somewhere. I remember just drafting him. But he's a player I'm interested in because I think he's going to have a big season. I think he's going to have I don't want to say he's going to have the same season he had 2 years ago where he was a top 15 fantasy play. But I don't see him falling that far out of it. I think he'll be a solid wide receiver, too.
Brandon Marshall will be wide receiver, too.
In fantasy.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I do think that, look, I don't disagree with you, but that is pretty good praise. I'm trying to see where he is in fantasy pros, as far as the fantasy pros have him. So this is a standard league. Let me go to PPR since I think things have turned towards that route in Brandon Marshall, 27. So, you know, for aggregate, he's just outside the wide receiver two conversation. You have him a little bit higher. I think I'm comfortable with that because he's around guys in your aggregate rankings. Edelman, Sanders, Emmanuel Sanders, Terrell Pryor, Dante Moncrief right behind him, Stephon Diggs right behind him, Tyreek Hill right behind him. I certainly would want him over Moncrief, Diggs, and Hill, who he's ranked ahead of. I could absolutely see people wanting him over Terrell Pryor because I think as much as you and I like Terrell Pryor, George, there are sort of more question marks about his role than even Brandon Marshall's, yes?
Yeah, there has to be. I mean, I like Terrell Pryor. I think I've got him in every league. You know, that's one player I do have in the Scott Fish Bowl, and I think that's like a Roto Experts mock as well. I like Pryor. I think it's still – I wonder what's going on about him that we don't know about. The fact that he – wanted to stay in Cleveland. Cleveland got rid of him. Only signed a one-year, $8 million contract, which means no other team in the NFL was dying to get him either. And a pass-happy league, a guy who has talent, this kind of talent. So I do wonder what else is going on there. But you're right. I mean, of course there's question marks. Him going to Washington with Cousins. But that's a passing offense as well. And they're going to throw the ball a ton. I like them both. Out of the players you mentioned, I would have taken Marshall and Pryor over all those guys, by the way. I think I have them just about ranked evenly, Pryor and Marshall. Edelman, love him, but he's getting up there in age, gets banged up, and they have so many options there now with Cooks as well and the runs. Gronkowski's back. Tough to really rely on anybody there. I'm not big on Sanders this year. I just don't think it's happening. Diggs, no thank you, with Sam Bradford not wanting to throw the ball down the field. I think you named somebody else, too, who I don't know.
Dante Moncrief, Tyreek Hill.
Tyreek Hill, he's another guy. All of a sudden, you're number one seeing all that defensive coverage. And Alex Smith, no thank you. I'm going to stop him. For the price that he's going at right now, I won't have any shares of Tyreek Hill. I hope I do, but I have a funny feeling, like I said, for his price, I think the value is just not there with Tyreek Hill. Moncrief, he's got in a standard league, I guess I like him better right now, right? He scored a lot of touchdowns last year. Mm-hmm. Just didn't catch many passes.
No.
So that's the problem there. But maybe that's all because of the shoulder injury, and that's taken care of itself this season. Lord knows I was high on him last year, and that ended up, I guess, in some ways being okay because of the touchdowns, but pretty much it didn't pay off.
I'm with you on Tyreek Hill. I actually don't see myself paying the price for him all that much. I got too many questions about it. I concur with how explosive he can be. And if you're in a return yardage league, that changes things where special teams get into the mix. But ultimately, I just don't see myself paying the price, especially considering the names I just mentioned. I'm going to take Tyreek Hill instead of Brandon Marshall? No way. Or take Tyreek Hill instead of Terrell Pryor, who's just a lot bigger guy and I think could be more of a red zone threat. Tyreek Hill's red zone is unlikely to be the red zone target with Travis Kelce and the way in which they use the running game there. He could be the bonus points guy, right? Your 50-plus yard touchdown, your 20-plus yard touchdown guy. But as far as red zones are concerned, that's Travis Kelce's deal, wouldn't you think?
Yes, I would. I mean, that's what Kelce doesn't get a lot of touchdowns, but he is that big target over the middle, and he runs the routes that, Lord knows, Alex Smith likes to throw. So, yes, I would think that would be Travis Kelce's deal.
We'll get back on the Giants later this hour. But we've got Joe Bond from Fantasy Six Pack coming up on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Mike and George until 10 o'clock. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blue and George Kurtz. Please follow us on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blue. George is at George Kurtz. But joining us right now is a guy who's in my Scott Fishbowl League or conference or division. I don't even know how to properly refer to it because it's such a massive undertaking of the 720 teams. Do we call it a division, Joe? Do we call it a conference? I don't even know. We're in the ELSA division, I guess, of the New Princesses Conference. Is that the best way to say it?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I roll with it. Okay. I know my 4-year-old daughter's happy I'm in the ELSA division.
Yeah, exactly. We're in the ELSA division. Frozen is on at my house as well. So Joe Bond is at Fantasy Six Pack. He's the founder of FantasySixPack.net. He hosts the Fantasy Six Pack Hour on Blog Talk Radio and also writes for so-called fantasy experts. So thus far through the Scott Fishbowl, you know, it's obviously with the scoring system, George and I talked about it yesterday, it's created a funky way of drafting, right? We see tight ends going early because they're seeing bonus points. We've seen a lot of quality wide receivers slip. How do you feel about your team so far? We actually are one of the slowest drafts in this slow draft, or we're in the ninth round, and I just picked earlier this morning. I got Larry Fitzgerald in the ninth round, and it gives anybody any indication of how late some quality wide receivers are slipping. But you happy with your team so far? You've loaded up at running back.
Yeah, I mean, with this format, you've got to go, in my opinion, you've got to go pretty heavy running backs at some point just because the first downs, I mean, you got to get these guys that are going to get volume and get more first downs. It's going to be, you know, that's the premium right now, as well as tight ends, like you said. I mean, and tight ends are flying off the board. I mean, I never take tight ends early. And I took Travis Kelce in the first pick of the second round. Never, ever have I done that in my life.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, you have McCoy, Lamar Miller, Spencer Ware, Doug Martin. You took Travis Kelce in the second round. Your quarterbacks, because this is a super flex, are right now Marcus Mariota and Phillip Rivers. I think you got to be happy with that. You've only got Keenan Allen at wide receiver, but that's probably going to be your next focus in these next few picks.
Yeah, I'm looking wide receiver. I do have one pick in front of me, so I don't want to give too much away. But wide receiver is definitely on my wish list right now.
All right, Joe, it's a Superflex league, so let's talk about how you change your strategy drafting quarterbacks in the Superflex from a standard league.
Yeah, so, I mean, clearly we're taking quarterbacks early, and then, you know, in this league, I think the quarterbacks, they score just so much more than everybody else. So you've got to go get two, in my opinion, to really compete, you've got to get two probably in the top 15, maybe top 18 at worst, in order to really compete. Because after that, I mean, you're looking at guys. I mean, you're seeing some people with their second quarterback here. Now, Alex Smith is okay, but there's question marks there. Sam Bradford, eh. I mean, that probably fourth, fifth tier of quarterbacks really is kind of questionable. And so, you know, I tried to go after a couple of guys that I know are going to be in good situations, lots of good weapons around them. And, you know, but I didn't want to go. I don't think it's completely necessary to go out and get Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers. You know, you don't need that. You still got to be able to focus on the other positions too. You can have the two best quarterbacks in the league and you're still going to lose if you have nothing else.
Yeah.
So, completely ignore it.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I took Brees in the second round because I wanted to have a rock-solid guy, and I didn't quite know, since I picked towards the end of the round like you did, I didn't quite know how the run was going to look of quarterbacks. So I was like, let me get one now and then wait on the second one. And George and I were actually texting the other night when my pick came up in the sixth round, and I was like, I really just kind of wanted another running back or a wide receiver, but I was nervous that there would be a quarterback run. And it's to your point, Joe, because that fourth or fifth tier of quarterback, depending on how you slice it up, I was worried about having that. And if I hadn't taken Roethlisberger in the sixth round, the following guys went: Eli, Tyrod Taylor, Blake Bortles, Carson Palmer, Ryan Tannehill, Deshaun Watson, Joe Flacco, and Alex Smith, all before I would have picked again. So that's what I would have been looking at, to your point. I would have been looking at Alex Smith or Sam Bradford or Jared Goff, and I would have found myself in a tough position. So I think you make a great point when saying that you gotta, while you don't have to have the top two, you have to make sure that there's at least a point in which you're solid at the position and not worrying about guys getting benched.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, you know, even at the turn pick, I've got the 12th pick, so at one and two, I thought about taking a quarterback, but I risked it. And, you know, I was looking at all the ADP data out there, and I know it's a small sample size with that ADP data, but we risked it, I risked it. You know, I'm bouncing stuff off friends too. Well, I'm doing this, that's why I say we. But I was risking it not taking the quarterback there early, because in all the ADP data, quarterbacks flew off the board in the second and third round. For some reason, our draft didn't, and a lot more wide receivers went in ours than most. Even though there's still a lot of wide receivers dropping in this because of the scoring format, there was still a lot more wide receivers taken in this than other drafts. And that's why you were even able to get Ben Roethlisberger in the sixth round. Like, that's not possible if you go look at a bunch of other leagues. So you're pretty fortunate there, actually. And I'm fortunate I was able to get Phillip Rivers at the end of five, early six.
I guess so. Next question. You have Spencer Ware and Doug Martin on your team. Are you higher on Ware than most people? I know a lot of people worry about Spencer Ware. Last year, as the season went on, he sort of lost production there. They didn't use him in the passing game as much. Tarkandrick West, you got the rookie there now. What's your speculation for Spencer Ware?
Yeah, I guess I am a little higher on him. I've looked at the rankings of Fantasy Pros. I am a little higher on him. But I don't know. Hunt's good. He's got a lot of talent. I just think Ware was still overall really good last year. I don't see how he's just going to give up this job, at least early season, to Hunt. I think Ware is going to at least start the season out, be good, and then, you know, look, we got 22 roster spots. I'll fill some guys later. I'll have enough depth at running back where if spare drops off like he did last year, I can find somebody else to fill him in. And look, even if Ware is only good for the first 3 weeks, I can flip back in Doug Martin at that point.
So, Joe, you're in Maryland, right?
I am.
Who's your team? Is it the Ravens?
No, so I actually grew up in Northern Virginia, so I'm a Redskins fan.
Okay. So, George...
Sorry. I know.
George wrote an article this summer for our Exclusive Edge draft package where he talks about new faces, new places. And the guys whose name has come up on our show a lot, who we both like, but there are question marks surrounding him, is Terrell Pryor. He got to Washington in a really strange fashion, because how does a guy like that, after producing, only get the 1 year, $8 million deal? But he finds himself in an offense that is relatively pass heavy. So how high are you on Terrell Pryor?
You know, I've got Terrell Pryor right now ranked around a wide receiver two, borderline wide receiver three. Look, I mean, the main reason why is because volume is going to be there. Like you said, it's a heavy pass offense. And he did produce last year, but, I mean, there's still question marks. I mean, he wasn't a wide receiver in college, so who knows what this guy really can do. You know, there's a lot of talk from other cornerbacks around the league last year that he wasn't any good and whatever. He kind of shut them up a lot last year, but I don't know. It's a little bit of a risk. I haven't targeted him in any mocks or any drafts that I've done so far. There's other guys around him that, even if I have him ranked a little low, I feel safer picking them, like a Dante Moncrief and even a Brandon Marshall. I heard you all talking about him. But, I mean, the volume's going to be there, and he's big guy. And, I mean, Cousins is clearly just going to throw the ball to him a lot, I would think.
Yeah, I like Pryor this year. I think Pryor is going to have a big season. Sticking with Washington, let's talk the running game here. Who do you think Perrine ends up being the number one back by, let's say, October?
That's a pretty good guess there. I don't really know what to say with the Redskins running game. It's been not very good the last few years. There always seems to be another, like, the next guy every single year. You know, last year was Robert Kelly. He didn't really impress me last year. So Perrine comes in. He's the next hot name. Can he do it? Sure. But I don't – I'm really just kind of avoiding the Washington backfield, so it doesn't really matter to me.
In general – we talked about prior. Obviously, the running game is not something you're in love with. I do like their offensive line with Trent Williams in there for a full season. I think it'll help Cousins even more, honestly, if that guy stays healthy, which I would hope he would. He's kind of break the bank. So which of all the Washington players is the guy that you feel like you're targeting the most? I think a lot of people in PPR leagues are in love with Jamison Crowder. Are you the same, or is there somebody else that you'd rather have?
Yeah, Crowder in PPR leagues is definitely one of my favorites. If we're talking non-quarter, I mean, I seem to be kind of where I take my quarterbacks. Cousins seems to be right around that range, so I seem to be taking him a lot. But if we're talking non-quarterbacks, then yeah, it's Crowder. I'm going for him in most of my leagues.
I mean, 29 total touchdowns and 5,000 total yards is all right with Cousins, so I think you're okay there.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a big, in Scott Fishbowl, it was a big debate with me, Mariota or Cousins. I was flipping the coin there a bunch of times and finally just fell on Mariota.
Well, it's good, Joe. I appreciate you joining us today. Good luck in the Scott Fishbowl. We can find Joe on Twitter at Fantasy Six Pack. He's the founder of FantasySixPack.net. He's a writer for so-called fantasy experts and host of the Fantasy Six Pack Hour on blogtalkradio.com/so-called fantasy experts. So thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Good luck in the rest of the draft.
All right. Thank you, guys. Good luck to you.
So we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about maybe Washington, maybe the Giants. We'll wrap up the NFC East for now, for the first hour. Mike and George back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and I have a bone to pick with George. You just duped me in our mock draft. You said you were going to take a running back, and you took a quarterback. What's up?
I looked at the running backs. My God.
They're terrible. I know. That's why I took a quarterback.
Yeah, that's why I did it, too. I'm like, you know what? I don't pick again for another 20 picks. I don't think I would get, you know, screwed where all the ones I'm interested in, there were like four of them. I don't think they would all go, but everybody may be thinking the same way we are. Some guys picked twice, so I'm like, you know what? Just take the quarterback I want. I was debating Cousins or Carr, and I went Cousins. Maybe Joe Bond convinced me about the Washington offense. But I just figured they're going to throw the ball all over the place. I'm not happy about it, Mike. It's funny. I take a quarterback in the 10th round, and I'm not happy about it because I wanted to wait longer.
Yeah, you've gone way off the deep end with this one QB stuff. You really hate it.
I still ended up with Cousins, the guy who's in my top 10 in the 10th round. I mean, like I said, normally I'd have waited, but really, I guess everyone else, a lot of people doing the same strategy, but also because I think people have drafted correctly. You know, it's been picked clean. There's just nobody staring out there going, draft me, draft me, draft me. Nobody I was interested in whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree. It got to the point where, like we just said, Quincy Enunwa and Sterling Shepard and other guys are getting picked before Russell Wilson. Where is Russell Wilson ranked in your rankings? Like 7th?
He's ahead of maybe right behind Cousins. So I would have rather had Cousins. That's a better passing offense. Plus, I'm worried about Seattle. You know, I just read something today, actually, before your pick, that they still want Wilson to run the ball. So, you know, I understand that you want him to move,
too, yeah,
be fluid, but if you want him to run the ball, man, they're not going to be worried about him getting hurt again. He's not the size of Roethlisberger or Cam Newton. Even those guys get banged up. I like the elusivity. Now, let him run around there. They avoid the rush and all. But I don't know if I want him running into the into the linebackers and secondary. I don't really like that all that much.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to take Russell Wilson that much. It's a mock draft. And it's not an off-the-wall pick. I'm just kind of mixing it up, you know, to see what different teams look like. I think if money's on the line, I'm probably going with Cousins, too, for the reasons you mentioned. And what I said during our interview with Joe Bond, by the way, he's at Fantasy Six Pack on Twitter. It's, the guy had 5,000 total yards last year and 29 touchdowns. And the team wasn't that great, you know? Like, what if it all comes together? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's quarterback. I don't think you can go wrong with either pick, but that's half the problem here. Could have gone Wilson, too. Could have gone Carr. You know, and there's a couple of other quarterbacks that are still available also in the road of experts. Like I said, got Cam Newton still available. Maybe you like him. Maybe you think Dak Prescott's going to have a second follow-up. I think Corey Parson has him at 7th overall. I have at 17. I think that schedule is brutal for Dallas. You know, maybe you like Tyrod Taylor. A guy may not look that good. You don't think much about him, but he's always top 10 as far as fantasy. Phillip Rivers is still there. Another quarterback that I think is going to light up. Stafford. Roethlisberger. Man, it's just loaded. You know, every time I look at this list, Mike, I keep getting madder and madder that I took a quarterback.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And, you know, the guy that keeps coming back to me, and maybe I have an affinity for him because he's been on my Dynasty League for so long, but I'm starting to think, like, based on where he's ranked, I'm almost thinking Phil Rivers is like this year's Matt Ryan insofar as him being ranked way too low for what he could ultimately produce. Now, you and I did both loved Matt Ryan last year, but he was ranked like 17 to 19 range. That's why I loved him. I was like, the guy's going to be a QB1 probably. And I didn't know he was going to win the NFL MVP, but I'm sort of thinking the same about Phil Rivers. Again, I don't think he's going to win the NFL MVP, but this defense isn't fixed, and I just feel like Phil Rivers is going to be in that top 10 and probably like top 6 by the end of the year. So realistically, I took Russell Wilson right there. I kind of like Phil Rivers even more than Cousins and Russell Wilson. Is that crazy?
I like Rivers too, but not to your degree. You definitely have some more man love for Rivers than I do. I would take Rivers after those guys. I'd still rather have Wilson and Cousins, but that being said, I do agree with you. I have no problem with him anchoring my team too.
Yeah. So that's it. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. It's Mike and George. We'll come back after the hour break to talk about a little bit of baseball with Wallace Matthews at 9:09. Mike and George.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Back for hour number two on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Got Wallace Matthews coming up in a few minutes, George. Very well-respected baseball writer. You can follow him on Twitter at Oyster Bay Bomber. I'm excited to talk to him, and he's somebody that you followed for a number of years, has a tremendous amount of knowledge about Major League Baseball.
Yeah, he's worked for ESPN, Newsday, was the Yankees for ESPN. Now he's doing, I think he works for the Times, working for both the Yankees and Mets in the Mets clubhouse this weekend. He's just he's knowledgeable, knows what he's talking about. Big boxing fan as well. If you want to talk boxing with Wallace Matthews, you know, I'm not a boxing guy, but he knows boxing as well. And like I said, the reason he's a down-to-earth guy, and he's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, he'll converse with you on Twitter, and he's not afraid to throw back at you. So it's
absolutely.
He makes me laugh.
Yeah, same here. I was going through his Twitter over the course of the last week when George sort of set up the possibility of him coming on the program. So he gives a lot of give and take from Wallace Matthews. So I'm excited to talk to him. Maybe we'll ask him about the upcoming fight between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor, which kind of devolved into I guess I can't say it devolved into a circus, because it's been a circus from day one, from the suggestion of it, correct?
I said I don't know much about it, but yeah, it certainly seems to be a circus. Is this going to be a boxing match? Is that what they're doing?
Yes.
So it's
McGregor's obviously
sort of
an MMA
league,
guy,
yeah.
But he's coming over to the boxing ring in order to fight the 49-0 Floyd Mayweather, which he doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, unless he lands a miracle punch, I would think he was going to get killed.
It's not happened to Floyd Mayweather in his entire career. Like, he's very rarely been touched up by guys that are lifelong professional boxers. He's a wizard defensively. Now, you could say, he's 40 years old and maybe he's a little bit slower. Yeah. And look, when I say he's got no chance, I still have to put it at 1%. Because there's always a chance in a boxing ring that somebody can get lucky. But unfortunately, it's become a whole sideshow. I always found McGregor to be wildly entertaining. I'm not a Floyd Mayweather fan for a number of reasons. But I don't think McGregor made himself look so good this week. It doesn't really matter to either of them. They're both going to get paid north of $100 million.
Wow. Is that what that comes out to for them? North of $100 million.
Both guys.
Wow. Good for them, man. That's crazy. And I wouldn't even watch this thing.
It'll probably be boring, because Mayweather's fights, frankly, are boring. That's just the way they go. So we should ask Wally about that when we come back from the break. We'll lead with some baseball, because we've got a lot of questions about the Yankees and Mets in particular, and baseball in general. But maybe we'll ask him as the last question what he thinks of it. I'm sure he'll laugh in the same way that I will. I think people are going to pony up the money for this, because it's a big circus and a big festival. And I think they're going to watch Floyd Mayweather play defense for 12 rounds and take another decision to go to 50-0. That's how I think it's going to play out. So I'm not putting down the money. Anyway, we're back with Wallace Matthews, Oyster Bay Bomber, big-time baseball writer. Excited to have him. Mike and George back after the break. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Roto Experts in the Morning. Decided to turn the page back over to baseball here for the next segment. And we have Wallace Matthews joining us on the program. You can follow him on Twitter at Oyster Bay Bomber. He's a great follow on Twitter. Wally, you like to get into the mix with people. You like to do a little bit of give and take when it comes to Twitter.
I do. That's pretty much the way I go through my whole life, I must tell you.
Well,
and that's not a secret to anybody who knows me.
Well, we like that. So last night, obviously, Cespedes leaves the game. George and I were talking earlier in the program about how, while the initial reaction is, well, it shouldn't be too serious, we've heard this before, frankly, and we'd be concerned if we're a Cespedes owner in any fantasy leagues.
Well, the other thing is, look, let's remember this. Whenever anything bizarre happens at Citi Field, the answer is always the same. It's the Mets, all right? You know, whenever anything happens with the Mets, it's not going to be something ordinary. And we know that they have not always been forthcoming about injuries. A, they've not always handled them in ways that other teams handle them. I mean, a lot of times, what other team do you know allows a player to say, I'm not taking an MRI, you know, leave me alone? Or, you know, has a guy sit around for 5 or 6 days and doesn't put him on the DL like they did with Conforto a couple of weeks ago. So they do have kind of their own unique way of handling injuries. So, yes, Terry Collins says it's not serious. Cespedes says it's not serious. Would anybody be shocked if he goes on the DL today?
No.
No. I don't think anybody's shocked at all. You know what? This is why, by the way, this is why Wallace is one of my favorite followers on Twitter. He just doesn't sugarcoat anything. Wallace, you brought up the Noah Syndergaard and saying, "Hey, I'm not taking an MRI." When do you think we might see his return?
That's a very good question. They've been very, very, I won't say evasive, but vague on that. You know, Sandy does a like a beginning of the homestand press conference whenever the whenever the Mets come home, and obviously this was the start of a homestand 2 days ago. And what he said was, "Noah's getting close." Okay, you know, you can interpret it any way you want. Close to what? I don't know what it means. You know, he's getting close to getting out of bed. He's getting close to, you know, throwing a baseball. He's getting close to coming back to the major leagues. I don't know. I mean, you know, and he said the same thing with Jairus Familia. We don't know exactly what any of that means. And I must say, you know, I cover both teams in this town, and the Yankees will tell you, and I'm not saying one is better or worse, but they will say to you, here's the schedule. You know, Starlin Castro tomorrow will go to Tampa and play three innings. Then he will go to Scranton and play four games in a row. Then we hope that next Friday he'll be back with the team. The Mets don't tell you things, you know, like that. So honestly, you know, I guess it's a long way of telling you, I don't know when Noah's coming back.
This is Wallace Matthews. Follow him on Twitter at Oyster Bay Bomber. He just his latest article is up regarding Cespedes on the New York Times, nytimes.com, and look for that one. So, Wallace, to that point, that's an interesting dynamic there. The difference between Citi Field and Yankee Stadium. Do you think that has historically been an organizational approach, or do you think it's almost manager related with Joe Girardi? Joe Girardi's a buttoned-up, by-the-book kind of guy. Do you think that's just his approach, or do you think it's an organizational thing?
He is a buttoned-up kind of, you know, by-the-book kind of guy. You know, we joke and call him Joey Binders because he does everything by his little binder. But I think everything's an organizational decision, you know, throughout baseball. I think that, you know, managers have been trivialized to an extent where the GMs really run the show. You know, I hear fans all the time saying to me, "Well, why won't Girardi bring up, you know, Gleyber Torres?" Because it's not Girardi's job. He doesn't do that. You know, he's told by Brian Cashman, you know, when certain guys are coming up, and here are the guys who are going to play. And I'm sure it's the same situation for Terry Collins. So, you know, whenever you look at these things and you say, "Well, why do the Mets handle injuries this way?" It's not Terry Collins' idea, you know. It may not even be Sandy Alderson's idea. It may very well be ownership's idea. You know, that's the thing. You have to understand the manager is just like the conduit between the media and the organization. But he certainly, you know, sometimes I'm not even sure if they make out the lineup card without a little influence from somebody else.
You know, we talk about both organizations. You know, it's July 16th. We have about 2 weeks of a trade deadline. What's your gut feeling of what both teams will do? Or maybe it's going to come down to the deadline over the next 2 weeks to see how they play. If you're running both teams, what are you doing?
Well, I think Sandy pretty much told you that, you know, 2 days ago. He said, you know, the next 10 days is going to tell the story of what we're doing here. I mean, don't forget, he's got 5, 6, 7 guys who are going to be free agents. And, you know, if he thinks they're out of the race, he may very well look to unload them, pick up some prospects, and start over again. I mean, you know, he said, we're not tearing this thing down. We're not blowing it up. But, you know, obviously the possibility is if they don't get closer, you know, they're moving a little closer. These two games obviously give them some hope that, you know, maybe we can sneak into that last wild card spot. But, I mean, realistically, what are we talking about here? We're talking about fighting to become, you know, the fifth best team in the National League and, you know, most likely playing one playoff game and going home. So, I mean, the odds are, I think the Mets are going to wind up being sellers. The Yankees, on the other hand, you know, obviously are close enough to think that they're only a piece or two away. So I think, you know, they're going to be looking for a starting pitcher, and they're going to be looking probably for a first baseman. You know, this is not cutting it now, but the thing that, and I asked them, I don't know if Sandy understood what I was asking the other day, but I asked him, you know, I said, look, the White Sox and the Cubs just made a huge trade. They don't trade very often. I said, it's pretty much accepted wisdom that you don't trade with the Yankees. I said, that's, you know, would you be open to trading with the Yankees? And he looked at me like I was crazy. He said, of course, you know, of course I would. And what I'm leading to is, why wouldn't the Yankees try to pick up Lucas Duda? I mean, they need a first baseman, and this is a left-handed hitter who could do quite well in Yankee Stadium. So if the Mets decide they're sellers and the Yankees are buyers, I mean, that's something that on either team I'd be looking at.
Well, first on the Mets, again, this is Wallace Matthews. You can find his work in the New York Times and follow him on Twitter at Oyster Bay Bomber. I guess regarding the Mets, how would you even begin to defend the fact that they are six games below 500 and yet are still in the mix? Does that make sense?
And not only that, I mean, let's not forget, they're 8.5 games out, I believe, at the end of the day yesterday, 8.5 games out of the second wild card spot with five teams in front of them. So, yeah, it's really hard to keep alive the illusion that we got something going here. But, you know, let's not forget, baseball teams are businesses and they have tickets to sell. You know, if you tell your fans today on July 16th that we're done and we'll try this again next year, well, guess what? You know, you may as well rent out Citi Field, you know, for weddings and bar mitzvahs and flea markets because it's all over. You know, nobody's coming. So, I mean, obviously their interest is creating the illusion that they're still in this thing. That's how you justify it.
You know, you mentioned the Yankees looking for starting pitching. Pineda's gone for the year, more than likely gone for the year. He has a second opinion on Tuesday, I believe, at Tommy John surgery. Is it just a matter of time until Chance Adams gets called up?
Interestingly, they keep saying, and Girardi has said this several times, and I know this is not coming from him because I doubt he's ever even seen Chance Adams pitch, you know, in person. I'm sure maybe he's seen a little bit of tape, but they say he's not ready. Now, obviously, he's got control problems. I think last night, he walked 4 and 4 innings, did not pitch well. They do not seem to think that he's ready for the major leagues. And I know that's to the disappointment of a lot of fans, but let me also point this out to my dear friends on Twitter. A year and a half ago, people thought Rob Refsnyder was going to be the next Babe Ruth. And I never hear his name mentioned anymore. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, the problem is, there's so much information out there. Everybody knows what everybody's doing in the minor leagues. People look at stats and go, this guy should be in the major leagues. Without ever having seen him play. The people who see Chance Adams play on a daily basis in the Yankees organization are telling us he's not ready yet. So, you know what? I'm not going to presume to know otherwise.
On that front, regarding Yankees pitching, you're saying they may still go out and get an arm. For me, to some extent, I just thought the Pineda injury actually might have solidified their fate for this season. Are they going to continue as they struggle? Are they going to continue to try to acquire, maybe jettison some of the younger talent still in the organization and put themselves in a position where they might only be going really for that one wild card game? Do you know what I mean? Like, they almost might need two pitchers at this point with Pineda being lost.
Exactly, yes. I know exactly what you're saying, and that's the first thing I thought of as well. But, you know, listen, they won a 16-inning game yesterday. You know, they have a doubleheader today. Let's say, for argument's sake, let's go into fantasy land here, and let's say they sweep today. All right? I mean, at that point, is anybody in the Yankees organization going to say, hey, you know what, man, I think we better just sell off everybody? I don't think so. Yeah, I think they're going to say, we're close enough, and we got to go for this. And it's the same reason. I mean, look, organizationally, we're talking about two different outfits, the Yankees and Mets. Yankees are always in win-now mode, even when they can't win now. And, you know, that's part of what their fans expect. So I think that, you know, look, they're going to say, we're still in this thing. You know, maybe one arm puts us over the top, and if we can add a first baseman, you know, we'll get back to where we were. And let's not forget something else. At the beginning of the season, this team was not supposed to really arrive at this point for a couple of years. Right now, unfortunately for the Yankees, in some respects, they had a great April. All right, great April and a great May, which changed everything. Okay, changed the perception of the team. Now you're quote unquote a good team, and you're expected to play like one. You can't say at this point in July, hey, well, you know what, we weren't expecting to be this good anyway. Just leave us alone. We're gonna lay down for the rest of the year, and we'll try again next year. Can't happen. They already set the bar back in April and May, so I think they have to go for it.
Good stuff. I appreciate you joining us this morning, Wally. It's good stuff, and we'd love to talk to you again as we get a little bit later into the season.
Okay, man. Anytime.
All right. Thanks. That's Wallace Matthews at Oyster Bay Bomber on Twitter. He writes for the New York Times. We'll be back to talk a little bit more football, a little bit of baseball, follow up on what Wally just had to say. We're back after this. Mike and George on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back in the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, we just had Wally Matthews on. Good stuff out of him, George. Always giving us good info. You know, I think He's a hardened New Yorker. I think he understands there's a chasm between the way things are done between the Bronx and Queens. So, but he did give us some good tidbits in there, and it's fair to say, as much as you and I are thinking that the Pineda injury might have steeled their focus and looking towards 2018, they're not waving the white flag, not by any means, especially if they at least pull off one more win today out of this four-game set.
You know, I think one of the most important things that Wallace said there was that, you know, they still have to sell seats. So if the Mets or Yankees were planning on selling right now, they probably wouldn't tell you it's going to be a fire sale because, hey, you're still going to sell tickets in the second half. I think the Yankees know, listen, with all the injuries they've had, this is not going to be their year. It's already been a successful season. I'll say this again because the youngsters can play. You need to build around those youngsters, but they can play. I mean, first base is a black hole for the Yankees right now. You don't have a fifth starter. You don't know who that's even going to be yet. Originally, it was supposed to be Brian Mitchell today as a spot start, but they canceled that. Now it's Sabathia going in the first game of the doubleheader because they had to use every reliever in their bullpen last night. So you know, it's a mess right now. The Yankees don't know who their starter is going to be tomorrow yet. Yeah, so that'll be intriguing as well. And it's good chance there won't be somebody on the Major League roster right now because they're playing a doubleheader today, which means every player in that bullpen may have to go again. So it'd be very intriguing to see what the Yankees do. They're sort of a mess right now. They have other injuries, too. Did you watch the game at all yesterday, Mike?
I tuned in basically towards the end of regulation innings. So I was kind of going back and forth between that and the Defiant Ones documentary on HBO, which is amazing. But I did watch a bunch of it, yeah.
So, did you see Starlin Castro at all?
I don't know exactly what you're referring to. So, no.
You didn't see him. He's not healthy.
Got it.
He was barely running out there. And I don't mean that in a lazy way. I mean, it's pretty obvious the Yankees told him, don't push it, that they brought him back early. There's no way he's healthy. He's barely moving out there, which means it looks like has another DL stint waiting. It looks like the Yankees, you see Torres, who had a really nice first half of the season, but now his warts are showing because they're playing him too much. You know, last night was one of the last couple of days in Boston has been one of the two worst games I've seen a player play. Between errors, I think he's made three now. He bunted into a double play yesterday, another bunt he couldn't get down. It was pretty awful. Pretty awful couple of games for Torres. And once again, I don't really attribute that to him. I think they've just been playing him so much that he's a utility player that's now being overexposed. It just shows you the Yankees over and over again. They make this trade for Garrett Cooper. I understand it's the smallest of small sample sizes, but he struck out in 5 of 7 plate appearances. They don't have a first baseman. Right now, you and I could play first base for the Yankees and not do much worse than what they have. You know, Romine drops a fly ball yesterday playing first base.
What was turn around.
He's a catcher playing first base.
What was he doing?
I mean,
if he just backpedaled, he would have caught it.
But he's terrible at pop. He dropped another one. I think he dropped one or two earlier this season. He's just not good at pop. I don't blame Austin Roman. He's a catcher player.
You're right. You're right. I shouldn't criticize him. And yesterday was an extreme example of the desperation that comes through in a 16-inning game. It was 16, right? It ended up being the longest game in the history of the rivalry at Fenway. It was 5 hours and 50 minutes, longer than the Game 5 of the 2004 ALCS by 1 minute. But I think it ended in 16, right? Was that the final?
Yes, it ended in 16. So, yeah. Like I said, the Yankees are pretty much a mess, which is why, you know, I think Cashman will, and I don't think he's going to sell. The Yankees don't have a lot of pieces to sell, but he's not going to buy big. They may make some little things. I mean, if the Mets want to trade him, Duda for a song, you know, a contract dump. Dude's a free agent at the end of the year, but if the Mets want to save a couple of million in the last 2 months, sure, I can see you doing that, but I don't think Cashman's going to go out there and give up anything of value in the organization for anyone, not unless that player, you know, is under control for 2-3 years, and I don't think we're going to say that. I think he kicked the tires on Quintana, didn't like the price, and the Cubs paid a heavy price. I think he'll kick the tires on Sonny Gray, but in the end, he won't move there either, and, you know, unless someone's going to offer, I said the first base of the Yankees' weakness here. But unless Casey's going to offer Hosmer, and even he would only be a stopgap because he's a free agent, I think the Yankees are still going to bank on that eventually, not this season, but that Greg Bird is still the first baseman of the future.
Yeah, and obviously that is shrouded in doubt now based on the last two seasons of him basically not being available.
Busts.
Yeah, busts. Just complete wipeouts, total washouts from a fantasy standpoint, from a major league standpoint. I thought he brought up another really interesting point. And all this, look, this may be Major League Baseball news over fantasy news, but I do think it's relevant because you're going to start to see guys move from the Mets. Like Wally said, you can't just expect Sandy Alderson to wave the white flag right now on July 16th and say, we're done, we're selling. But I think we know which way this is going. They're six games below 500 right now. Even if they get on a little run and right around the All-Star break, they're one or two games below 500. Are they really challenging? They still don't know when Noah's coming back. There's all these other question marks. I thought the most relevant point about the Mets, and something I probably didn't even realize, is that they have 5 to 7 free agents, I think he said, at the end of the year. So, like, to your point earlier, these are the types of guys that they can just kind of move on from because the Mets don't spend a lot and they're not keeping most of these guys, if any of them.
Yeah, I think the Mets, you want to trade Duda. Like I said, you're not going to get something great for him. You want to trade Jay Bruce. Assuming that you think you're out of it, Jay Bruce could bring you back a decent piece. Yeah, we're not talking anywhere near what the Cubs got for Quintana. You're not going to get Eloy Jimenez or that type of prospect. That's not going to happen. But there'll be a team out there that'll be interested in a left-handed power bat. So Bruce should bring back something nice. Reed and Blevins, two relievers. Those guys could bring you back something. But I think a lot of teams are going to think, hey, you know, we saw what the Yankees got from Miller and Chapman last year when they traded them. Well, I should be able to get the same deal from my reliever. That's different markets. Not going to happen. Last year was sort of the perfect – it worked out perfectly for the Yankees because Cleveland and the Cubs, teams that hadn't won a World Series in forever, they were teams that were going all in for it. They had strong farm systems, and the Yankees had the two best relievers maybe in baseball. You know, we don't see that. You know, Reed's a nice guy, nice reliever, but he may not even close for his new team. He'd probably be more of a setup man. So I think that's the Mets going to have to look, drop their asking price a little bit. They can ask for whatever they want now, but in 15 days when it is the deadline, that price may have to come down. But, hey, maybe the Mets keep winning. You know, they've beaten Colorado twice, beaten them up pretty good. As Wallace said, we don't know when Noah Syndergaard's going to return. You know, what does close mean? We don't know. Familia could be back by the beginning of August as well. So the reinforcements are returning. I think Neil Walker comes back on the 28th is when they're estimating he could return. So this team could be at full strength by the deadline, which could add to more, question marks about what they should do.
You know, George, one thing that got burying the lead in the Yankees-Red Sox game yesterday, we're talking about how long the game was and that it was the controversy with Matt Holliday and even some of the bad plays. But we got a crazy pitching duel yesterday from Luis Severino and Chris Sale. Obviously, Holliday homers in the ninth. Kimbrel blows his first save in 31 opportunities at Fenway Park. So Kimbrel was the bad news yesterday. And obviously, Chris Sale continues to lock it down. 13 strikeouts in 7 2/3, while Luis Severino had 6 strikeouts in 7 innings, but only gave up the 1 run on the road. So a really nice start from both guys.
You know, and listen, it was a nice start, but the smart ass in me wants to go, well, really, was it so nice? Neither team could hit anybody in the other team's bullpen either. That's why the game went 16 freaking innings.
Yep.
I mean, it was sort of a joke at the time. The first thing that came to my mind, I'm like, maybe Sale and Severino didn't pitch so well. These teams just can't hit. The Yankees really haven't been able to hit for a while. They've struggled, especially with runners in scoring position. That game should not have gone 16 innings. The Yankees had plenty of chances. I think the Red Sox had a chance of a ninth or a tenth. I forget which inning it was, where they probably should have scored as well. But both teams struggled. I think the Red Sox, there's some silly number out there. I guess the Yankees this year, the Red Sox are like 3 for 40 with runners in scoring position. How does that work out? I mean, wow. I mean, that's a shocking stat when you consider the Red Sox offense and where they play their home games. But both teams, yes, it is. Sale and Severino were great. And it was a fun matchup to watch there. The only reason the Red Sox scored off Sale was that Severino got a little wild one, and he walked back-to-back batters, ended up coming back to horn him. The Yankees, other than that one epic at-bat by Judge versus Sale in the eighth, didn't look like they were going to score off Sale. He pitched 100 innings last night. He was that good. But it was a fun matchup to watch.
Yeah, Benintendi went 3 for 6 yesterday too. So there's a lot of zeros up there yesterday. There's a bunch of 0 for 6s, including Aaron Judge with a couple of Ks. You had Ronald Torres with 0 for 6 as well. So batting averages plummeted. Judge no longer the Triple Crown guy that we thought. Matt Modica's sitting in the studio. We're going to talk to him after we talk to Daron Davenport, which we're going to do in the next segment. So good stuff from Wally Matthews. We'll look towards Toronto Davenport. We're talking Philadelphia Eagles. George, I think I saw in a draft recently that you picked up LeGarrette Blount. Did you do that in our mock draft or somewhere else? I think I saw that. And I just am curious about your thoughts about LeGarrette Blount. And do you think this is going to be a nice transition for him?
I've actually got him in both. I've got him in the mock and the Scott Fishbowl. So, yes, you see me take him twice.
Wow. So you actually have some level of confidence that LeGarrette Blount's going to produce this year. It's not going to be the 18 touchdowns that we saw last year, but you like him.
I think it's more that I like the value of where he went there. Like I said, in the Scott Fishbowl, I've got Blount, Fournette, Dixon, Sims. They're not doing great at running backs there, but I didn't key on them there. And the Rexler's mock, he's just a backup there. I got Devontae Freeman leading the charge there. I think he's going to be a touchdown guy. The Eagles are going to score points, and we'll talk about that next.
We will. Let's talk to Jerron Davenport. On Twitter, he's TDavenport_NFL. I'm excited to have him on the show in the next couple of minutes. George and I will be back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Mike and George. And then Teron Davenport coming up here in a minute. You can catch Teron Davenport on Twitter at TDavenport_NFL. He's a member of the Pro Football Writers Association. He's a reporter for the Eagles Wire of USA Today. Also, football game plan, Eagles analyst on CSN Philly. So, Teron, thanks for joining me and George this morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
No problem. So we talked a little bit about the other NFC East teams this morning. We talked some about Dallas yesterday. Obviously, this is a highly competitive division. I think the Eagles are just as much in the mix as the other teams. But as you and I were even going back and forth on Twitter a little bit yesterday, I think a lot of the focus and a lot of the hopes are that Wentz takes an even bigger leap from his rookie season to his sophomore season. So how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the basic expectation for them. That's why they surrounded him with the talent that they put on the team, with whether it be Alshon Jeffrey, you know, Danelle Pumphrey, Torrey Smith, LeGarrette Blount. These are all guys they added. You're going to have the Lane Johnson is going to, you know, that excuse cannot be put in either. So really there's no reason for him not to take that next step. My main thing as far as taking that next step is not as much statistically as it is just stylistically. You know, he needs to become more efficient on third down and situational football side of things. You know, he needs to be able to deliver the ball across the middle of the field with accuracy and not have his passes sail on him. And that's why he's working on his mechanics. So there's different ways that he can improve, and I think he will take the next step.
Teron, how do you expect the running game to be broken down here? Are they going to release Ryan Matthews eventually? Is Blount going to be of a short yardage guy, goal line guy, a three down back, Sproles, what's his role? How do you think it's going to work out there?
Yeah, Matthews will at some point be released. They're just waiting on the neck injury to be fully taken care of. You know, that situation has to work itself out. Once it does, then he will be released. I think Blount, they have a weight clause in this contract, so that tells me that they want him to stay down and wait, and that they will likely use him as more than just a short yardage back. When they initially signed him, I felt that would be the role he would cover, a short yardage back. But, you know, they're going to give him the ball more. I saw them in mini camp and OTAs. They were using him in single back sets. So that's something that you'll probably see. I think you're going to see a mix of Danelle Pumphrey also, as well as Darren Sproles catching the ball out of the backfield and some of their two running back sets. You know, they'll have them both in. They like the motion Pumphrey to create the matchup issues. So that's something. But then you can't discount the second-year player, Wendell Smallwood. He's going to have an impact as well. They are really high on him.
They have a tremendous amount of depth, obviously, there. And what's interesting is that, look, they're coming off back-to-back 7-9 seasons. It's not like the entire organization bottomed out, although there was a coaching regime change after one of those 7-9 seasons. What I think is interesting regarding the team this year is that You have the nice matchup with Doug Peterson developing Carson Wentz. You have the running backs that you just mentioned. But you mentioned earlier Alshon Jeffrey. They've sort of remade this wide receiving core from 1 year to the next, because now you have Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith to add to Jordan Matthews. And what we like is maybe an emerging Zach Ertz. So how do you actually see the roles splitting down between these players?
Well, yeah, I think Alshon will be the first read. He's their lead guy. Jordan Matthews, make no mistake about it, he is one of Carson Wentz's favorite targets. They have a really good chemistry. Zach Ertz, I think, is going to definitely be a factor. And a lot of people say, hey, well, you know, he only puts up numbers when it doesn't matter. But I think those who say that have to take a deeper look into things and understand this game a little bit more. Because what is happening, you look at the tight end position, a lot of times you're running those wide stick, the choice routes, and it really is all based upon chemistry. You and the quarterback have to be on the same page. He has to know where you're going to break and how you're going to break and at what point. And that's something that will allow him to throw you open, so to speak. And you look at Zach Ertz, the guy has never had the same quarterback 2 years in a row. So it's going to be difficult for him as a tight end to be able to excel as much as he should, you know, as much as his ability would dictate. So that's why you see the late contributions with him, you know, coming later in the season, where you see him just start to break out. And I think having Wentz back again this year is really going to be good for Zach Ertz. And you're going to see him put himself among one of the top five tight ends in the NFL.
That's a great point.
I like the sounds of that. I've got him on way too many fantasy leagues. Teron, Nelson Aguilar, is there any hope for him?
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of hope for Nelson Aguilar. I'm not saying he's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver, but I'm a lot different from a lot of the people here in the Philadelphia media. I actually think Aguilar is a very talented player. You have to understand, you know, it's a mental thing. And the guy was not at the right place mentally as far as with football, and he, watching him in OTAs and minicamp, there's a different bounce to him. You know, I know Nelson personally, and in talking to him, I sense a different mindset from him. You see him catching the football differently also. He's more comfortable, and that's something that's very important. And you saw him start to really emerge as a guy who would stand out and be a really good weapon for them in minicamp and OTAs. Now, granted, it's just shorts and some T-shirts, but you see him finally getting to work in this slot, which I've all along felt was his best position. I don't think that he's an X receiver where you put him on the line and expect him to beat the corner at the line and always catch the deep passes. He's a guy that you want to get the ball to him in space, let him take advantage of his playmaking ability. He's a former running back. You know, he plays the game like a running back once he gets the ball in his hands as well. You know, talking to Jordan Matthews, he said that he hasn't seen a receiver that can catch the ball, stick his foot in the ground, and get upfield as well as Nelson Aguilar. Now, catch the ball is the thing that he has to begin to do more consistently, and you see that starting to happen. Like I said, he's catching the ball more naturally. The receiver position is something that you have to just let it happen. You can't press. You know, and that's why it's very unique for guys like Doug Baldwin and Steve Smith Sr., guys that play the game angry. Usually as a receiver, you know, it's just something that you just allow it to happen. And that's something that Aguilar is starting to do.
Again, we're with Teron Davenport. You can catch him on Twitter at @TDavenport_NFL. He's a reporter for the Eagles Wire, of USA Today, NFL draft analyst for F-Ball Game Plan, and Eagles analyst for CSN Philly. So you talked, I know you wrote an article a couple of weeks back, which I read in its entirety, about bold predictions for the Eagles defense this year. So we've talked a bunch about the offense, but they continue to tweak the defense. Obviously, they see somebody like Benny Logan leaves in free agency. They bring in Timmy Jernigan. They bring in Chris Long. So they brought in some veteran guys to hopefully steal this defense a little bit. You actually think Tim Jernigan is a really good addition to this team?
Yeah, Jernigan is an upgrade, to be honest with you. He's an upgrade over Benny Logan. He's a better pass rusher. He's very stout against the run. He's very disruptive. And I really do think that he'll have more sacks than Fletcher Cox this year. And that's not to say that Fletcher Cox is not the better player. He clearly is, and he's a more disruptive player. But the fact of the matter is, Jernigan is now in a scheme where he's allowed to use his pass rushing skills. He's allowed to use his ability to get upfield with aggressiveness. Those are the things that he wasn't able to do when he was in Baltimore, where he just had to pretty much be a space occupier, you know, and allow C.J. Mosley, Zach Orr, these guys go ahead and clean up. That's not the case here. He's going to be able to be the one to go hunting, so to speak. And I think you're going to see a really big-time addition from Jernigan. He's, like I said, a disruptive guy. He's very aggressive against the run also. So he's a really good player. He's going to help that defense out a lot. And there are always questions about his motor. You know, that's something that came especially late in last season. But to alleviate that, he's, A, not going to be going against two offensive linemen all the time. And, B, they have a rotation. You got some younger guys in Destiny Vial, Elijah Qualls. Gabe Wright is a guy that they signed via free agency. You know, Bo Allen, when he comes back, they're going to have a rotation. And then they'll even use their NASCAR package where they have Vinnie Curry bump inside at D-tackle as well in pass rushing situations. So he'll always be fresh and able to go 1,000% every snap.
Teron, the Eagles may have received a little bit of a gift during the draft with Sidney Jones, fell to the second round because of the Achilles injury. How's he looking so far?
Well, Sidney Jones is not on the field. He still has that Achilles injury. He got the boot removed after OTAs. He wasn't there for OTAs. All right, let me try to remember this correctly. He wasn't there for OTAs, but he came back for minicamp. And he got the boot removed before he came back for minicamp. That's what it was. And his initial introduction to us came during rookie minicamp. But because of the rule, the NCAA rule about schools graduating, you can't come back. If you're an underclassman, you can't come back after rookie minicamp until your school graduated. So long story short, we haven't seen Sidney Jones on the field. He probably won't really do anything until later this year. You know, I would say August, he'll start the rehab process as far as like doing some on-field stuff. But you're not really going to see much from him this year, if anything. But at the same time, he was my number one corner. You know, you go back and you watch some of the things that he was able to do. I mean, the guy's a very solid cover corner. Ball skills are tremendous. I just want to see if he's going to have that click and close ability that he had before the Achilles injury.
I mean, it's bad for him personally, but it may very well be a huge bonus for the Eagles that he was able to fall. Similar thing happened with Jalen Smith and the Cowboys, and hopefully both of those guys are back on the mend in their sophomore seasons in order to produce big time. So appreciate it, Teron. Great stuff as always. Where do you see the Eagles slotting in this year in the division?
Yeah, I could see them winning division. I think more realistically, they'll be in contention for a wild card spot. I see them at like a 9-7, 10-6 type of record. And you know, that's if some things go right, defensively, offensively, and special teams as well.
Good stuff. Thanks, Teron Davenport. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks to Teron Davenport at @T_Davenport_NFL. Good stuff there on the Philadelphia Eagles. Thanks also to Wallace Matthews from earlier today at Oyster Bay Bomber. And thanks before that to @Fantasy6Pack. That's Joe Bond. He's a fantasy writer as well. So-called fantasy expert is where you find him. Wally Matthews, you find his stuff in the New York Times. He's one of our favorite guests, I think, that we've had. He's just, he's a straight shooter. And George, we like those types of guys, right?
Nothing. Nothing sugarcoat, anything. Yeah. Let's it fly from the hip.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of straight shooters, we have Matt Modica joining us, and he's coming up for the next 3 hours. We'll be on Fantasy Football Gold with Tony Sincotta. Matt, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Good morning, George. How's the palatial estate doing?
Palatial estate is still standing. It's going well. And it was a doubleheader today. I'll be spending a lot of time in this palatial estate.
Very nice. Well done. So what do you got on the docket today, Matt? Anything in particular that you guys are looking to talk about? Obviously, going to recap Scott Fishbowl. How do you feel your team worked out there so far?
I think the Fishbowl went pretty well. We completed it in like 4 days, so I was pretty happy
about
that.
I'm so jealous. So Matt finished his draft in 4 days. I'm in the 9th round. George is in the 18th round. I actually started 19th. Looking. This is how sad I am. I started looking through all the divisions and all the conferences. I think we're the slowest draft of all the 60 drafts.
Yeah, at that point, I might just hit like pre-draft everything and just walk away.
Yeah, it's just a little frustrating. I mean, we do have really good professional guys in there. I can't blame one person for it. Mike Clay from ESPN is in there, and Joe Bond we just had on from Fantasy Six Pack. Myself, there's
you're barely doing a round a day. My guess is you can blame a lot of people.
Yeah, it's inexcusable. We have smartphones and stuff, and you know what?
I get it.
Especially that it's all like industry people. You pretty much know who to take. I know the format's a little different, but come on.
Yeah, this is a high profile. Right. That's what I'm saying. By the way, there's a million wide receivers left because nobody.
If you go in a couple of picks, just pre-draft. It's not that hard.
Yeah, we have guys that are like near the turn, and they're just taking the one pick.
Yeah, I lucked out at four. I got Elliott. Somebody took Brown at three, which in a PPR, I would take Brown at three, but not in this format. And after I got Elliott, I was able to get Evans and Jordy Nelson. And I know people were going crazy for the tight ends and loading up on running backs, but I had no problem slotting that way.
I mean, I punted on tight end for this reason. I think everybody doesn't realize how much of a mess that position has been for the last 2 years. So if you're going to bank on Gronk and Reed and all these other guys, good luck, because they're huge injury risks, and the rest of the stuff is all jammed up.
I got Kyle Reed in the sixth. I was damn happy about that. I mean, Kyle Rudolph. I don't see why he gets pushed down so far in that format.
Yeah, I don't get it. So, in any event, so they're coming up for the next 3 hours on Fantasy Football Gold. Then it's going to be Al Melchior, FanRag Fantasy Baseball for 2 hours. And then we're going to rerun College Football Today. That's with Joe Lisi and Rich Germanelli. He had good guests. He had Purdue head coach Jeff Brom. He's a brand new head coach. Terry Bowden from Akron is on there. He's good friends with Joe. And then the third guest is John Jansen, former offensive lineman. I think he played for Washington, but he was offensive lineman at Michigan. So good guests there. We had good guests on today. I'm excited. Scott Fishbowl, what do you want me to do? What else you got going on? NFFC draft right now?
Yeah, I'm in the sixth round of an NFFC draft. We have two NFFC Hall of Famers coming on the show today, Chris Vaccaro and Michael Edelman. So
good stuff. I know Chris Vaccaro very well. So, George, you know Chris Vaccaro as well.
I do. You know, Mike, you brought up something interesting there. Those people at the turn of a draft who make one pick and then wait a long time to make a second pick deserve to be shot.
They should be thrown out of the league.
If you're the 11th pick,
exactly.
Just rank three guys. Worst case scenario.
It's not that hard, folks.
All right. We leave it with anger, but we'll turn it over to love. And Matt Modica and Tony Zincata, they're coming up with Fantasy Football
Modica
Gold
and Zincata, love.
Feel the love. Playing out with some Foo Fighters. Have a great Sunday. We'll talk to you next Saturday. I'll be on during the week on Roto Experts. Mike Bluda, George Kurtz, we're out.